Welcome to the DrDavidMarlin.com Stable Science Podcast. I'm Dr. David Marlin, and along with a great team of experts, I'm helping horse owners and riders achieve optimal performance for their much-loved horses. In these podcasts, we will discuss science-led research, technology, information, and advice to help you care for your horses so they may live healthier, happier, and longer lives. To support the podcast and all our research and science for horses, go to our website, www.drdavidmarlin.com. And to learn more about what we do and the hot topics under discussion, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Stables Science Podcast for Dr. David Marlin. I'm Dr. Gillian Tabor and I am a chartered physiotherapist and I specialise normally in the treatment and the rehabilitation of horses. But for this podcast, I'm going to be wearing a different hat and excitingly, I have a guest joining me. So I'm really looking forward to discussing this topic in particular. So I am qualified as a physio to treat humans, and I've covered women's health as part of my training and as part of my sort of early days in the NHS. But as you know, I now exclusively work with horses and small animals. So this is sort of a little bit out of my own topic area, hence the guest that we've got to speak today. But I am a woman, I'm a rider, I'm a runner, albeit a very slow one. I'm a mother of two children and I am rapidly approaching a very key part of my progress through womanhood, and actually perhaps I'm there already. But this podcast will be of interest to our female listeners, and also I think it's going to be really useful for the men if you're listening, because I'm sure you have women in their lives, in your lives. So I have great pleasure in welcoming Emily Plummer to the podcast. So, Emily, hello.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Ah, you're very welcome. So, could you introduce yourself and tell everyone a little bit about what we're going to talk about today?
So, I'm Emily Plummer. I would say my key qualification in this is that I'm a running coach, but also, like you said, I'm a woman. I've experienced many of the things that we're going to talk about, and really, I took a big interest in looking at women's physiology and how our bodies are impacted by that when we want to train and perform. For me, that was in running, but I do have a background in equestrian. So I do appreciate how our bodies can affect us when we're riding and competing. And really, it was kickstarted for me after having children and trying to come back from that to my love of running. And looking into all the things that my body was doing and how it was affecting me when I was trying to train and run.
Oh, brilliant. It's really interesting, isn't it? And as a runner, well, as I say, a runner, I joke when I say a runner, I run very slowly, but actually as a rider, I know how much it's sort of affected me. So can I start with a few quick fire questions just to introduce what we're going to talk about and just to give us an overview. So My first question is, does the menstrual cycle affect female equestrians?
Definitely. It affects all of us.
Easy answer. Do you think riders know enough about the menstrual cycle?
No, I would caveat that with I hope they know enough about their own menstrual cycle, but potentially not enough about the other science that goes with it.
Do you think coaches know enough about how it affects the riders that they're coaching?
No, I would say on the whole, no. I would hope that female coaches are slightly more empathetic to women at certain stages of their cycle. And men too, I hope, but I would say that women coaches obviously have that first-hand knowledge of what it feels like to ride when they've got a period.
Do you think that actually the equestrians and the coaches talk about it at all?
Definitely not enough. I don't think any of us talk about it enough, no.
No. I spoke about this with my daughter, actually, who's a teenager, and she looked horrified that I should ever, you know, suggest to her that she says to her instructor, oh, you know, I'm on my period. You know, she just blushed and sort of went quiet. And on that note, do you think that girls going through puberty think about their menstrual cycle and enough in relationship to their riding?
No. Probably not. I didn't put two and two together literally until about 4 or 5 years ago when I started to look into this and really understand kind of what's going on in our bodies at different stages in the cycle. So I think when I was a teenage girl, it was really about, oh God, the embarrassment of having a period and having to deal with that and perhaps having to tell somebody about it.
And actually, these discussions have come at a timely point in our sort of progress through understanding how it affects girls, especially when we look at the changes that have occurred in the uniforms or the dress requirements for riding clubs and internationally. Certainly I noticed on social media at first with the Australian Pony Club when they were they shared some information about a survey about girls and how they wouldn't ride during their periods.
Or, oh, really?
Yeah, they wouldn't want to compete because of the requirement to wear light-coloured jumpers. And so I had a chat about it with our pony club, and it wasn't something that I don't think had been spoken about much. And it certainly hasn't been mentioned by our UK pony club, although I know it has with our riding clubs.
No, not at all. And I think it's so important. That's such a big part of it, you know, for young girls feeling comfortable. It's only going to impact their riding. You know, they're only going to feel like they, like you say, in Australia, they don't even want to ride if they're having to wear light coloured joppers and go out at a competition and they've got their period. They're just not going to want to do it. So is that going to impact them, you know, in the long term in an equestrian career, perhaps? So I think it's really, really, you know, a top point to discuss, particularly in the big corporations like the Pony Club, to make sure that everyone's feeling comfortable and that people can talk about it openly.
Yeah. Okay. So as part of that open discussion, then let's have some information about women and their physiology. So could you give us a little bit of an overview, maybe a little bit of a revision and perhaps a learning point for some about our menstrual cycle and how it affects our bodies?
So if we think about the female reproductive cycle, let's start off with the hormones. So there are four key hormones that are really part of the reproductive cycle in a woman. You'll have estrogen and progesterone, which hopefully people have heard of. Those are the two key big ones. We've also got two other hormones, luteinizing hormone and follicular stimulating hormone. And those are to do with kind of the development and the release of the egg into your fallopian tubes. But estrogen and progesterone are the two real big ones that really do impact us a lot. And just to kind of revise the menstrual cycle. So a woman who's having a natural cycle, so a regular period, regular menstrual cycle, not on any contraception or approaching menopause, they will have a cycle generally 28 days, but it can be a bit longer, can be slightly shorter than that. And if we start in the middle, so generally about 14 days into your cycle, you will ovulate. And that ovulation obviously releases the egg, and that then kickstarts a rise in estrogen and progesterone. So those two hormones are really preparing your body for potential pregnancy. If you think about it in that way, every month for about 14 days, your body is preparing for an embryo, preparing for a baby. So you'll get this rise in estrogen, rise in progesterone, and then about 5 days before you expect your period, those will start to drop down. They'll peak about 5 days before your period. That's when people might start to experience PMS. Then they'll drop down to day one, which is when you get your period. So day one of your period, we generally say, is day one of your cycle. And at that point, if you think about it, your body's realised, okay, there's no baby, the hormones drop down, and then you're into your low hormone phase of your cycle. And really, that's when your body's quite relaxed. You might find things far less stressful. And despite the fact that your period might be uncomfortable, some people experience cramping, generally, that's when you may perform slightly better, you'll feel less anxious, and you've got better temperature control in your body. You've got lots of other benefits, like you might be sleeping better. You might have a higher pain threshold during that time. So that's the general 28-day cycle, as it were.
Yes, that does take me back to my self-lessons. I don't personally, well, maybe a bit more, too much detail, but I was never a regular like that to actually be able to get work like clockwork and to know.
I think it's quite common.
And you mentioned about the better performance and the from day one to day 14, and that's interesting as well. But can I just have a talk about this research and how much do we know about women and this idea of differences in performance around the cycle?
Well, really, it's not been it's only been quite recent that people have actually started to take a real study into what happens with our hormones, how it affects our body, and then how it might affect us in training. Before kind of the 1980s, women weren't really included in many studies because women can create so many anomalies, and people who were conducting the studies weren't necessarily asking the right questions. They weren't saying, you know, are you on contraception? Are you having a normal cycle? How long is your cycle? Are you perimenopausal? You know, they weren't really asking these things. They would maybe take women into a study, use them in a study, and then realise that actually they were creating quite a lot of anomalies. So in many cases, women weren't used and men were often used in science studies, particularly when it came to kind of physical performance and fitness. So it's really only in more recent years that it's become more knowledge. There's been more knowledge out there and more studies specifically done into women. But even so, some of the studies have only included a limited number of women, because obviously it becomes more difficult to get women that are all within a similar life stage and similar point in their period in their cycle, to kind of get that consistency to take in a study. It's not been for a long time, to be honest.
I guess it adds complexity to the research, because if you've got outcomes that are going to be different on day 14 to day 21, then that is a variable in your, you know, data collection. It might, as you said, cause these anomalies. So you mentioned better performance. In what way might a rider have better performance in the first half of their cycle, do you think?
So actually, it might be easier to look at the second half of the cycle.
Oh, okay.
To understand the stresses that you might feel during that then you won't feel during the low hormone phase in the first phase. So in the second half of the cycle, like I said, when you ovulate and those hormones start to increase, let's talk about estrogen to start with. So a key thing that estrogen does, it can really affect your mood. And you'll have noticed this, parent of a teenage girl, and I myself, when I was a teenager, I first started getting that influx of hormones. And estrogen really can make you more emotionally sensitive. It interferes with the serotonin in your brain, so the hormone that regulates your emotions and your mood. So estrogen can really affect that. So what people might feel when they're competing or training and riding is that they might feel more anxious, they might feel more nervous. If you've got a competition booked in your diary and you think, oh, actually, that's going to be when I'm in my high hormone phase, you can just recognize that. And, you know, there's not a lot you can do about it, to be honest, but you can recognize that and know that actually if you're feeling more anxious on that day, it might be, okay, hang on, this could just be my hormones. I'm probably just feeling a bit stressed because of that. So that's a real big one. And actually some people have said that they can really feel a loss of mojo in the second half of their cycle. And I feel that a lot when I'm running and training. I get into those last 2 weeks of my cycle and I feel like, oh God, I'm just exhausted. I don't think I can do this. I don't know if I want to do it. So many women can find that they feel more anxious, perhaps depressed in the second half of their cycle. So that's an interesting one that really might affect people when they're riding. So it really can affect how we take in our fuel. So perhaps more for me as a runner, but it will still affect those who are in the saddle for long days, or maybe at a competition. Estrogen can really affect how we process carbohydrate. So you might have a really big breakfast and then start to feel more tired more quicker because your body is struggling to store that carbohydrate, and will just use it immediately as it comes in. And actually during the high hormone phase, our bodies tend to use more fat for energy rather than carbohydrate. So that's a really interesting one that might affect people, like I say, who are at big competition for a long day.
Oh, so there's a few things there that I really, really want to focus on. You mentioned this anxiety and nerves in relation to hormones. And if you didn't know which part of your cycle you were in, you probably might come down on yourself quite hard about that, or you might not be able to articulate how you feel or why you feel that way to somebody else, you know, perhaps your coach potentially, when you know, maybe they're thinking, well, what's wrong with you today, you were fine last week kind of attitude. So that to me I think is a big factor. And also we know that there's a relationship with horse behavior and how a rider or a handler feels as well. So if you're not feeling like you're, you know, on it particularly, whether it is even schooling your own horse or going out for a hack, irrespective of, you know, competing at a higher level, that might affect your actual interaction with your horse. So I think that's something that, you know, we need to be really aware of.
And I think that's it. It's more than anything, it's just the awareness. Because like you say, the number of times where we will have beaten ourselves up about it and gone, oh God, I'm such a rubbish rider today. Why can't I do it? And like you say, communicating that with a coach could be vital for some women who really, really are finding a particular session or whatever stressful or competition stressful. And actually to know, okay, hang on, what part of my cycle am I in? Perhaps it's that. Perhaps, you know, I'm not just riding really rubbish today. And actually it could just be that my cycle's affecting me.
Well, if you're feeling anxious, you're not riding well, I think, you know, there is a risk that that could come out as frustration and an anger, which potentially could be taken out on the horse. So there is, maybe tenuous, but there is a link to, you know, the welfare of our horses here. And I don't know about you and your riding, but there have been times when I've been working my horse and I'm going, oh, nothing is going right. And I've walked away, I've had to walk away. And fortunately, I've recognised that. But I, you know some people that wouldn't step back at that point. They would try and push through it. And so that, that's really interesting. That loss of mojo, or that I can't do it, I'm no good kind of thing, fits in with that, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think this is where it's really key to point out for many women who have maybe felt like that and gone, oh, hang on, maybe that's what had caused it. Really think about starting to track your cycles, and whether you are on a contraceptive pill or you do just have a normal cycle, start tracking them and start to recognize those points in your cycle where actually you might be finding things slightly more stressful, or you might be feeling slightly more relaxed and feeling happier about things. So I think it's really important to get to know your cycle and how it is for you, and understand how that can fit in with how you're feeling.
And then I know that you're not a nutritionist, I'm not a nutritionist, but you were talking about fueling there and the different ways that we process carbs and fats. And I know that there has been some sort of looking into how equestrians fuel themselves. And unfortunately, at our events, you know, there's a burger van, or there's, you know, there's access to nothing, and people don't really eat particularly well, especially on the day of the competition if they're nervous. Is there any sort of a general advice, and, you know, maybe linking back to coaching runners as well, that you could give people on the perhaps on the run up to a competition or something that might affect them?
So the one thing that I really promote with my runners is really fueling for the activity that they are about to do. So I'll say to my runners, look, tomorrow you've got a speed session planned. It's relatively short, but it's going to be quite hard. And really, I want you to think about not just eating breakfast, lunch and dinner, but thinking about how am I fueling for that exact session. So it might be right after breakfast. So make sure they're having whatever works for them carbohydrate wise for breakfast, making sure they've got that fueling ready to go. And then if they need to take something with them. So this is where perhaps if it's in the high hormone phase, I might say, you know, take some jelly babies or take a gel with you or a piece of flapjack or something to have a nibble on during their session. And then make sure that afterwards they've got something to replace those carbs that they've burnt and the protein as well to help with recovery. So really, it's less about thinking, what am I having breakfast, lunch and dinner? It's really thinking, what am I going to fuel my body with so that I can perform that session, perform at that competition to the best that I can?
Yeah, well, that takes a bit of planning. So yeah. I think that, as well as tracking ourselves, we plan ahead.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I go to yards where I see horses and, you know, the staff there, they've been on the go really early. They haven't had breakfast. They've had a coffee. They're, you know, they're eating biscuits and chocolates. And they're not thinking about fueling themselves, and they might, you know, after they've mucked out however many horses and ridden so many horses, they might have a coaching session where they, you know, they don't actually have the nutrients in them to be able to fuel that, and especially if they're in this phase as well.
Yeah, definitely tricky. I'll leave that one to you.
Although saying that, I have gone to some yards where they all stop and they all go in for breakfast.
Oh,
and they
great.
Are looked after, and that is good. But
yeah, I think living on sweets and Lucozade is not, you know, it's not going to lead to optimum performance. But I completely understand. It's very, very tricky. And you need to really have it all planned ahead, like you say, and that's not always going to be easy for someone with, you know, I'm lucky that I just have to focus on myself. I don't have to focus on an animal to make sure that they're in the best place as well. So yeah, it's definitely a tricky one.
And nerves as well, and being able to eat when you're nervous, just about to go round cross country, and you don't want to be feeling nauseous halfway round.
That's
and
it.
About your stomach rather than your horse. No, oh, that's another topic as well, isn't it? Okay, so.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thinking about sort of women's participation and the levels of elite performers, how much do you think, you know, our knowledge of women in sport and, you know, the menstrual cycle affects our ability for our, you know, our women to get to that elite level?
I think, I mean, starting at grassroots, it's really having the knowledge there from as early as we can in teenage girls to know their cycle and know how it affects them and how it can affect them further on down the line. I think carrying that all the way up the levels would be fantastic. At the moment, I don't think the knowledge is there at all. And for people, for girls when they're a teenager competing in whatever sport that is, to understand their cycle and understand how it's going to affect them and to work their training around that, and maybe make considerations in their training around their cycle or whatever life stage they're in. I think that's only going to benefit them when they get up to more elite level.
Do you think that the, you know, it, it's a, I shouldn't say this, I might get shouted down, but do you think it's a limitation being a woman in sport?
I'd like to say no. I feel like it just gives us another string to our bow. I think it would be so easy to just be consistent all the time and to have a constant, you know, constant level of hormones, constant physical fitness and feeling, you know, relatively the same the whole time. But actually, I feel like the peaks and troughs of the cycle are really what can build quite tenacious women in sport. So I think actually it shouldn't be a negative, although in some ways probably it does affect people. I've been very lucky that my cycle, I find it quite low key, and my periods are never that bad. I've never had serious cramping or anything like that. So I suppose I'm looking at it from that point of view. There might be women out there who do really suffer or do have other other issues like endometriosis, PCOS that affect many women, and they might say different. But I'd like to think positively and like to say, no, it shouldn't affect us.
And there's a massive explosion in interest in women's sport, isn't there? I mean, you've only got to look at the women's football teams and things like that. Do you know how they manage it, or is it part of their management that they have to think about?
So from everything that I've read and looked into, actually at the elite level, it is now being talked about. I know that the women's Team GB ladies hockey team, in their more recent years where they've had real success at the Olympics and Commonwealth Games, they actually have openly said that they tell their coach when they get their first day of their period. So the day one, they email their coach and say, I've got my period today, and they might communicate that to the rest of the team so that everyone can support that person and be there for them in whatever way they need. They might not need that much support, but everybody kind of has that knowledge about it, and the coach knows about it, and so they can accommodate that in their training and their competing. So I find that really, really interesting, that actually at elite level they are really now starting to recognise it, but it's getting that to trickle down to everyone else and to grassroots, which at the moment I don't think it probably is.
Well, certainly it's nothing that I've heard discussed, and it wasn't through my, you know, puberty or riding career, and I know I'm a bit older, but it was all very much a hush-hush sort of embarrassment kind of thing. You would never share that kind of information. No. So it'll be fascinating to see whether that, as you said, it does trickle down to grassroots, and especially to the children that we've got growing up now through Pony Club and into riding, because I think it will affect them a lot. Then I don't know, you know, the risks I think that I do see with girls and riding is body image as well. And I think we're going to be talking about that in another webinar and podcast as well. But body image and not eating, wanting to look good on your horse, how does that affect your menstrual cycle?
So I've looked into this a lot. I've actually not had any clients of mine that I coach in their running that have been affected by this, but I do know of some who have openly spoken about it, who have said that actually when they were younger, training and competing was so important to them, and there was this real ethos around not having a period. They didn't want a period because it was inconvenient, and actually they seem to think, I don't know why, that if they didn't have a period, it was better. It meant that they were getting faster and they were lighter and running quicker. And there just isn't the education there to say, actually, your period is very important, and it's a real kind of health marker to show that you're a healthy young teenage girl. And there are parts of your cycle, the hormones in your cycle, really key for things like bone strength, building lean muscle mass. And if you lose that early on, and you maybe don't get a period in your teenage years, and it takes a while to come, then you might feel the effects later on in life. There might be girls who are suffering with osteoporosis and other bone conditions later on in life because they just didn't have the hormones there early on. And I think, like you say, with body image and everything we see on social media nowadays, there is this real feeling that, you know, as a teenage girl, you need to look good. I mean, I didn't look good at all when I was a teenage girl, and I was riding around when I was kind of 13, 14, that was the last thing I thought about. But I'm very aware that for many people, it is the forefront of their minds. And they do think, you know, I have to look good. And they might start doing things like restricting their calories, trying to lose weight. And that then can have effect on whether or not they get a period, or if they are already getting a menstrual cycle, it might stop. So it's really, really key for teenage girls, and also for parents, if they can, to be aware of their cycles. Make sure that they are, I know when you're a teenager, it's not always regular, but that they are having a menstrual cycle. And if they don't have one for a period of time, then to go and get help with that, because it is so, so vital. And I don't think that many teenage girls are perhaps aware of that.
But I don't think as a teenage girl you think about the consequences later on in life. You know, you're not going to worry about that. And certainly you're not going to be thinking about, oh, this might affect my ability to start a family later on in life or anything. You know, they're focusing on what they're, you know, that's important to them at the time, which, you know, I understand. So it's up to us really to be an advocate. And certainly I hope that, you know, I have the relationship with my daughter to be able to discuss it in that kind of depth. And she will be made to listen to this podcast as well. So that would be a double. But then, yeah, thinking about sort of starting a family and, you know, if you want to and you're lucky enough to be able to have children, and then you do. I mean, I have had two children. I did ride up sort of early stages of pregnancy, and then I tried to get back on very, very quickly. I felt shocking. I felt that there was nothing in between my rib cage and my pelvis, and that all my core control had disappeared. I'd also put on weight through it as well. What was your experience about coming back into sport after having your two children?
So first of all, I'll say I haven't actually even sat on a horse since having children. So I can't put it in that perspective. But running wise, like you say, feeling very wobbly, like I've got no core, no pelvic floor. So for me, a big part of my recovery from having children, the big issue that I had was incontinence, was running. So I had my first son about 4 months later, went to a local park run, local 5k, ran as hard as I could, which I appreciate wasn't as fast as I used to be, and that was fine. I was fine with that. For me, I was just happy to be out. Got back, crossed the finish line, and then looked down and realized that my leggings were soaking wet, and I was like, oh, what's happened here? Didn't even realize at all. And it was that really made me think, oh, actually, I should be doing more. I should have learned a bit more about this and spent a bit more time recovering my pelvic floor from birth. So that was a big one for me. And I think just mentally being in the headspace to get out and compete. And I expect that's probably the same in equestrian, in that I now have this baby I want to be with all the time and look after, and having that kind of finding that mental balance between wanting to get out and do something for myself and get kind of my physical fitness back and do the thing that I love doing, but also the balance of being at home with the baby and looking after them. And actually I found that probably quite tricky, more tricky than a lot of the physical stuff.
Yeah, it's incredibly challenging, and certainly in our chosen sport with horses, it's very time consuming. So you know, you have to have the support in place to be able to do that. And I do take my hat off to those elite performers that are back out there, because physically, I mean, I'm not an elite performer. It took me a while to get back to my previous level of sort of effectiveness in the saddle. But as you said, you know, that mental side of things as well, as to whether I wanted to. But horses are, don't know, it surprise anybody, you know, they are a risky sport. And if you aren't strong, and if you don't have the stability in the saddle, you are then putting yourself more at risk. So, you know, you have to be ready to get back on board. And I don't think there's any sort of right or wrong answer as to when that will be for you. That's interesting you said about the incontinence. A bit of experience in women's health, and the fact that, you know, we'd encourage all our postpartum mothers to start to think about it, and this is what they had to do. But we never really followed it up, and we never, I don't think we ever spoke about it as it would be, you know, very, very likely. And I think, you know, the mums thought, oh yeah, I'll just do a, you know, a few little pelvic floor squeezes and I'll be fine. So that's possibly an area that we need a lot more investigation in, certainly to do with riders, because it's not something that I've heard about.
Is it something, not something you've heard that's affected riders necessarily?
Oh, I guarantee it affects riders, but the sort of interventions or the advice about it. I mean, we have, for anybody that is struggling, there are specialist women's health physiotherapists that are, you know, that is their job. So please reach out to go and find somebody that knows what they're talking about. But yeah, it isn't spoken about, as far as I've seen, in the even literature or lay press. So that's something that I think we probably could investigate more.
Definitely.
If you think about the forces that go through a body on the horse, are going to be fairly similar to a runner. Yes, that's something to think about. Okay, so Emily, is there anything else that you'd particularly like to talk about that we haven't covered so far?
So earlier we did speak about the effects of estrogen in our cycle and how that can affect us. We talked about kind of the intake of carbohydrate and all of that, but actually the other hormone that's really, really key in the cycle is progesterone. So progesterone is the one that again increases after you've ovulated, and that's the one that really encourages your uterus to create that lining for fertilization. So it's really, really key in the cycle, but what it actually does to your body is it increases your core temperature. So it might affect women thinking about riders, riding at that time of the month when they are approaching their period after they've ovulated, and they get that increase in progesterone, might feel hotter, particularly in the summer anyway, but start to feel that heat. And also it can affect how you sleep. So having that increase in core temperature really might make people more sleepless, struggle to get to sleep, and so then feeling more tired. And it just kind of adds to the effects of estrogen, so that in that high hormone phase, you know, you might be feeling anxious, tired, nervous, and it's just another thing to be aware of in that high hormone phase.
Well, that's really interesting. It all adds up, doesn't it? We're going to be challenged more in that high hormone phase on a number of factors. Then really, I think in summary, we are both probably very suspicious that riders aren't aware of the influence of their menstrual cycle on their physical situation and how they are mentally feeling. I've learned some things about mood and certainly about the fueling in that sort of second half of the cycle, which I didn't know about either. So I think that's going to be of interest to people. Anything else in summary that you think we ought to key take home messages?
I think a key take home, really, as I said earlier, is to if you're having a normal cycle, having a regular period, they might not be that regular, but if you're having a period, then really track your symptoms. There are some great cycle tracking apps nowadays available. I use one called Wild AI, which is fantastic, and that asks you every day, asks you a load of questions, says it's quite quick, but you can go in and say, right, today I think I'm at this part of my cycle and this is how I'm feeling. It asks you how you slept, whether you feel hot, if you've trained, how it felt, and so it really can, after a few months, create a good profile for you and really say, right, we think you're ovulating right about now. And it gives you suggestions and says, you know, at this point in your cycle, perhaps train a little less, don't do too much and take it a bit easier. So just track your cycle, see how you're feeling, and take all of that into consideration when you are training and competing. And particularly, like we said earlier, if you're in that high hormone phase and you're starting to feel really negative with yourself, then just appreciate a bit more. appreciate what your body is doing a bit more and communicate that with others. I think the only way we're going to improve the knowledge around this is by communicating it with the people around us, the people that we're competing with, our coaches, our family, whoever it is. You know, even if it's just the smallest comment of, oh God, you know, I've got my period coming, I think, and so I'm feeling a bit rubbish, feeling a bit low, then people can understand that. And I think particularly when it comes to your coaches, they're just going to be more empathetic with you and hopefully get a better relationship and better training from that.
Well, even to understand why, as a stereotype, I want chocolate at some time. I think that's going to be useful.
Yeah. But
yeah, just to echo your point about communication and just, you know, understanding, and hopefully, you know, if we've got any coaches listening that, you know, they might be bold enough to ask, you know, their clients, you know, how they're feeling, and if they are willing to share that information, you know, about their cycle, and, you know, then if they could perhaps modify their coaching to support. It's not actually just performance, is it? It's actually about the social aspects and the enjoyment of it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, if we're feeling anxious and nervous and we don't know why, and we're not getting the tune out of our horse because it's just not going well and we're blaming ourselves, and that isn't, you know, that's not useful at all. Mm. So, yeah, understanding where we're at and what we're doing, I think, is really important. Mm. So, well, thank you ever so much, Emily. That's really, really good. And as ever, you know, with these podcasts, if people have got any comments or they have got any questions, then please do email them in. We do like to have a discussion about it. And, you know, if we've said anything that sort of hits home with you, or, you know, you're a coach or a rider that has a viewpoint that's different to ours, or you've got experiences that you'd like to share, then.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do please drop us a line. But thank you very much for listening. And Emily, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast and the Stable Science series. If you want to learn more about this topic and our work, head over to the drdavidmarlin.com website. Our website and community of members discuss a wide breadth of topics, and the website houses thousands of articles, webinars, videos and research, all designed to help horse owners, riders, trainers and breeders achieve optimal performance for their much-loved horses. The drdavidmarlin.com site is an independent information resource for all equestrians, a source of unbiased, science-based research. To learn more about what we do and the hot topics under discussion, follow us on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter.